This is the True Voice Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Back in 2011, I started a social business agency called True Voice Media. In 2013, I launched this podcast because my audience told me that they wanted to learn more about how social media could help them grow their business, but they wanted it to be interesting and without all the standard social media hype and BS. Just someone who will give it to them straight with honest, simple strategies that they can use today. If you're a new listener and that sounds like what you want too, listen to this episode. And if you love it, subscribe to our show. We'd love to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started. This is episode 40 of Conversations, the True Voice Media Podcast. We made it to 40, and I have Bernie with me. Bernie, introduce yourself to everybody. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Hey, Jeff. So thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm Bernie Borges. I am the executive producer of The Social Business Engine, which is an online media property where we showcase brands succeeding in social business. We do that through video, podcasts, and journals. And I'm also the CEO of Find and Convert, a B2B digital marketing agency.
Awesome. I am so thrilled to have you on the show. As we were chatting a little bit before we got started, I've been doing this podcast since 2013, somewhere around June or July. And I talk to a lot of social media professionals, content marketing, people in all different industries who talk about how social media has affected their business, but very, very rarely. I actually don't think I've had anybody on who is in the world of social business. And I have been fascinated with this trend since before it even had a name, back in 2007, 2008. I was really fascinated with the implications of social across the enterprise. So to get started, I have my own definition of social business, but I was hoping you could kind of tell me how you explain it to people when they say, well, what the hell is social business?
Yeah. Sure. And I love talking about it, Jeff. So to me, an organization is a social business when they understand and they embrace social at two levels. One is the technology of social and the culture of social. Now, when you unpack that a little bit, that means that social is something that the company does across the organization. It is not limited to just marketing. That's the key, that's the big differentiator, Jeff. Companies that are doing quote-unquote social media marketing, and I'm not here to criticize that, and I know you're not either, because you say that on your website.
It's part of it. It's part of the, you know, absolutely, the mix. So obviously we're both okay with that, but yeah, to your point, I think it's bigger, but go on.
Exactly. It's bigger. It's broader. I'd rather call it broader, because it spans across departments within an organization. So what does that look like? That means that companies that have a customer service element to them, whether they're B2C or B2B, it doesn't matter, and they integrate social into customer service. Companies that are growing and they're recruiting and they integrate social recruiting, they train recruiters on how to use social to find qualified talent, engage with them, build relationships with them, and then bring them into their funnel, their recruiting funnel. Companies that use social to engage with customers and bring them into private communities and then integrate social technologies. See, when I say technology, I'm not just referring to Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and, you know, the list is long of public places where you and I and anybody can just go hang out on social media. I'm referring to all the different technology platforms that you purchase to support your social business, influencer marketing, media monitoring, posting, analytics. The list is long. So I get a little long-winded on this topic, Jeff.
No, I literally have brought you here to be long-winded to talk about this. I honestly do not get the chance to talk to too many people about this. And I think part of the reason is that this is so poorly understood out in the marketplace. The common understanding is social media. Most people that call us are here to talk about social media. And what I want to talk to you, what I want to ask you about and get some of your experiences on and how you've dealt with this is, how do you steer that conversation to that broader conversation about social business? Because I've found that everybody wants to talk about social media marketing. And when you bring up this idea of recruiting and customer service and social selling and innovation, R&D, and internal social and how you communicate and collaborate internally, people just kind of gloss over. So how do you steer that conversation from social media marketing to social business?
Sure. So one of the first things that I like to talk about and we talk about when we're talking with clients is the concept that it's really difficult to market your business through your logo, because the age that we're living in now, people have access to people so easily through all these different social channels. And actually, Jeff, one of the things that I've begun to do is I've begun to use the word social a little less and the word digital a little more, because they're synonymous. All these channels are digital channels, whether it's on your mobile device or on your desktop or laptop, it's digital, right? So people are the ones that are engaging with brands, and they're not engaging with a logo. They're engaging with the people who work at those brands. So the notion of the marketing department doing all of that engagement is just not realistic. You know, especially when you're dealing with in B2B, and it can apply to B2C as well. But the reason that it applies even more to B2B, Jeff, is because think about it. If you are a technology company, or you're a company like 3M, 3M is a company that's made up of scientists. The marketing department at 3M, they're not experts in all the things that 3M does, and they never will be. And that is not an insult to the marketing team. That's just reality. They're not scientists, right? The experts are the scientists at a company like a 3M or any kind of a company that makes any kind of a specialized product. The domain expertise is not in the marketing department. It's in the rank and file employees. So those employees need to be educated on how they can tell their story. And they need to be empowered on how they can tell their story and how what they're doing in their employment has an impact on the world, the society, or their local community, or a specialized niche that they operate in, whatever the case may be, right? All of that, when that happens, when an organization begins to move itself in that direction by embracing what I said at the top of this, both the technology and the culture of being social, and employees are empowered to be that, then that's when really great business value can happen. And it becomes a mindset shift across the entire organization.
And I think what's really interesting about that, and I echo so many of your sentiments, typically the way that I communicate to an organization that the three pillars of success I usually use are technology, culture, and process. So I say, you know, it's good to have, great technology, but if you don't have people to buy in or you don't have the process to do it, it's all going to fall apart. So I echo a lot of those sentiments. But I think what's interesting that you point out is the culture, because this is the fundamental problem with the proliferation of social media quote-unquote professionals, I guess, that are out there, the number of people that have gotten into this business but without a business background or an understanding of organizational behaviors and organizational dynamics. Because what you're talking about isn't just that you can come in and say, okay, use Twitter, but you actually have to understand how to make two departments, such as scientists and marketers, talk to one another and collaborate on a project that is really, it requires a little bit from each of them. So when you go into an organization and you're assessing them from a social business perspective, you're obviously looking at the quality of their technology. You're looking at the type of culture that they have. What are some of the things that you're really looking for in the beginning? Like, what are some of those starting points that you would look for?
Excuse me, I get choked up on this topic.
No problem.
So one of the things that we look for, Jeff, is to what extent do they have that social mindset internally? You know, one of my earliest guests on my Social Business Engine show said something brilliant, and it was Todd Forsyth at EMC. And he made a statement. He said, and there at the time, there were about 48,000 employees. I don't know what the headcount is right now. He said we had to learn to be social internally first before we made a concerted effort to be social to the outside world. And I think that was so spot on. So we look for, is there that mindset now to be social internally? So what does that look like to be social internally? Well, have they adopted any kind of an internal collaboration tool that has a social element to it or has social capabilities built into it? You know, products like Jive and IBM Connect and SocialCast and you know, products that are in that category. So I'm not here to endorse any one of them. I'm just naming, you know, three mm-hmm. of, you know, well-known companies or products that are in that category. But the category is internal collaboration that has Yammer's another one. So just to, again, just, you know, name some names of products.
Slack, Salesforce Slack, Chatter.
Exactly. Salesforce Chatter, another one. All good examples of products, technology, Jeff, that is used for internal collaboration and it has a social element to it. Okay. Another one, if we're going to name products, is IBM Verse, which is one of the newer ones, right? Mm-hmm. So the extent to which an organization is using that kind of technology to collaborate, to communicate and collaborate internally, then what that is doing is that is exercising a new muscle for that organization. And once they realize that they have that muscle and what they can do with that muscle, then they're ready to get serious about being social externally. Mm-hmm. And then, and not that it has to be serial, not that we have to do this for a year before we think about being social external. There can be some parallel efforts going on. And in the parallel efforts, we're typically going to start with a very small group of people. You know, the old metaphor, the tip of the spear, right? We're going to pick a really small number of people. It might be 5, it might be 10, it might be 15, it might be 20. It depends on the size of the organization. And we're going to do some really, really close, intimate planning with those people around how to be social. And what are the objectives? Is the objective customer care? Is it business development? Is it research? You know, is it brand building? What's the business objective? And then put a communication plan around that to engage at a very human level and then have the right content that's going to support that. Content's another important element to this, Jeff, as you know. And so put the right content plan in place to support that. So again, it coming full circle, it starts with the mindset internally to be social internally. And then when they're ready, whether it's parallel or serial, although we like to do it in parallel, if possible, start with a small team to really identify a business goal and start engaging through that small team. And we like to work with them very intimately. A lot of one-on-one coaching, Jeff. You know, there's a lot of old school stuff that works really well here. The one-on-one coaching where you really give people a chance to ask questions and have detailed conversation about the plan and the execution and what's working for them and where they're not comfortable and identifying challenges and helping them, like literally walking alongside them and coaching and helping them and giving them feedback and all of that. And then usually in the 3 to 6 month range, you start to really get some awesome feedback about what's working and what the challenges are.
So you actually kind of led me into one of what I was going to ask you next, which was that how do you go about disrupting that status quo? So you gave a really good example and one that I like, which is kind of start small, have a test group that you play with and you educate and you do all that. But there's always going to be in every organization somebody who doesn't want to come along. They've always done it a certain way or status quo feels safe and change is dangerous and all that sort of stuff. How, you know, is it time? Is it education? What is it that disrupts the status quo? And is it sometimes that organizations just have to make that decision to either not have a person involved or to replace them? You know, is it hire someone new for that position, get rid of who you've got, or outsource sort of question that they always run into? So how do you disrupt that status quo? Is it education or time?
We put them in a headlock, usually. That
give usually them noogies works. And wet willies. Yeah.
So, no, seriously. You know, there's a book that Jeffrey Moore wrote some time ago. I think it was his second book, called Inside the Tornado. His first book was Crossing the Chasm, and his second book was Inside the Tornado. And in that book, it's all about Silicon Valley and how technology companies succeed. And he talks about the head bowling pin concept, right? Most of us have been bowling at some point in our lives. We know that our objective, every time we throw that ball, we have two objectives. One is not to get in the gutter. The other one is to hit the head pin, right? Because if you hit the head pin, you have a chance of knocking down all the others, or at least as many out of the 10 pins as you can knock down. Mm-hmm. It's a metaphor. And in this context, we look for people who represent a head bowling pin potential. And these are people who are well-respected. They're influential. Doesn't matter what their title is. It doesn't matter what level they are on the org chart. What matters is that they're respected and they are willing. They will cooperate. They say yes to a pilot program or to whether you call it a pilot program or not. They say yes to sitting down and collaborating on a plan to be social, to engage through these digital channels in a way that humanizes their brand. And also, you know, you've got to communicate that, hey, there's something in it for them. I mean, their personal and professional brand is going to elevate. And that's good for them. And one of my favorite recent books that I read was The Alliance, written by Reid Hoffman. Is that his name?
From LinkedIn.
Yeah, LinkedIn, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, he co-authored it, and I don't remember the names of the two co-authors. And the concept of the alliance, and this is very relevant here, I'm not taking a tangent, the concept of the alliance is that today, an employer and employee need to have an alliance with each other. And that alliance is, I'm the employer, I'm here to help you in your career, and what I need from you is I need you to help us achieve our business goals. Let's align. Let's work together. And by the way, I fully recognize that there may be a point in your career where your career move is external to this company. So if and when that happens, then, you know, let's just work toward your end goals together, okay? And hopefully we're going to provide as much opportunity as we can that's going to be productive for your career. But let's have an alliance. And so that's what we're talking about here, is building an alliance with employees. And part of that alliance is helping them build their brand by giving them the opportunity to share their domain expertise with the people in the marketplace. So coming full circle back to this head bowling pin concept, Jeff, find people who represent, you know, I used earlier the other cliche, tip of the spear, right? And now I shifted over to the head bowling pin. It's, you know, the kind of the same thing, right? Even visually, you can almost, you know, connect the two, right? It's about finding people who have that influence within the organization and embracing them and putting a plan in place with them that you work with them one-on-one, not, you know, not, oh, we're going to have a meeting in a conference room and you're going to be one of 30 people. And no. I mean, we may have that initial kickoff meeting that way. After that, it's one-on-one.
Hey, everyone. My apologies for the interruption, but I need to pause real quick just to thank our sponsors and partners who make this show possible. Today, I want to point out a partner of ours. It's a piece of software that we use called Contactually. Contactually is a CRM, and I know that when most people hear the word CRM, they let out a collective groan, because if they're a marketer or a salesperson, they probably have these painful memories of multiple months of setting up, reporting issues, unintuitive interfaces, just awful experiences. And realistically, most salespeople just want to be able to visualize their pipeline and keep in touch with the people who matter and who are important. How hard should that really be? But I'll tell you, when I think of CRM, I actually think of something different, because I'm staying top of mind with my network and I'm keeping in touch with my prospects. And when I meet someone at an event, I'm going to have a wealth of information about them and an email in their inbox by the next morning. How do I do it? Contactually. Contactually is a CRM that is designed to maintain relationships and close deals. I can personally tell you that it has been wonderful for our business. For small businesses and individual salespeople, Contactually is the CRM you've been waiting for. It took me about 3 to 5 hours to set it up initially, and after that, I was keeping in touch with about 30 to 50 more people per week, and no, I am not exaggerating. So if you don't have a CRM or you're unhappy with your current CRM, try Contactually, totally risk-free for 30 days. If you hate it, you've lost nothing. But if you love it, trust me when I tell you that it pays for itself faster than you can believe. Learn more and try it for free by visiting truevoicemedia.com/CRM. So, like I said, you're the 40th guest on this podcast, and I think I can't remember if we've had anybody that I've spoken about social business with other than fleetingly, but as a total conversation, I'm pretty sure you're the first. And I guess I don't want to call it a concern, but if one out of 40 people that I've spoken to in the industry is talking about social business like this, will this ever become commonplace? Because you and I can sit here for hours and we can discuss social across the enterprise, and you're talking about taking small test teams and working with them one-on-one, and you have an organization that does this, I have an organization that does this, but more and more we're just seeing social media marketing being folded in with advertising agencies, SEO, web development firms. Everybody wants in on the social media gold rush. The chances of this becoming commonplace, if you know, we can only talk to so many businesses and we can only help so many businesses, and there's only going to be so many leaders that are out there that see the value in this, unless, you know, social businesses become wildly successful and runaway success relative to the others. Will this ever become commonplace in your mind, or is it a matter of time? Because I find myself getting a little bit impatient, thinking that I've been talking about this now for 8 years or so, and I'm still waiting for someone to call me up and say, I'd like to talk to you about social business design.
Yeah, I echo your sentiments, Jeff. I share with you something that happened to me in 2015 that's very exciting. I had the opportunity to be part of the IBM Futurist community. I was invited, and what that allowed me to do is to give me some insight into IBM's approach to social business. First and foremost, they very much are using the vernacular, what we're describing here as social business. They've been using that vernacular now for probably 3, if not 5 years. Mm-hmm. They have initiatives that they literally call social business. They are launching all kinds of technology that feed into social business. I mentioned earlier IBM Verse is one of those social technology tools that feeds right into the whole social business thing. Whether or not the term, the words social business stick, and I have a little bit of a vested interest as you do, but in my case, Jeff, I have a whole online property that's called Social Business Engine. Mm-hmm. So I have some vested interest in it. But you know, even though I call it Social Business Engine, I'm also interchangeably calling it digital. And a big part of what I'm discussing these days is digital transformation. And when I talk about digital transformation, nothing else changes beyond whether I'm calling it social business or digital transformation, nothing else changes. Everything I've said up until this point, 100% of it would apply if I just called it digital transformation. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, one of the biggest concerns CEOs around the world have right now is being Ubered, meaning being disrupted. Mm-hmm. Right? That's one of the biggest concerns every CEO, especially in major corporations, have, is being disrupted. And how are you going to innovate and engage with customers if you ignore digital? No business on the planet can ignore digital and be innovative and embrace their customer. Mm-hmm. Every business in every industry has to have some level of innovation and some level of customer engagement, and there has to be some level of digital in that. Now, do we call it social? Do we call it digital? I don't really care, Jeff, and I would suggest you don't either, because mm-hmm. fundamentally, what we want to help organizations do is learn how to do that, right, and help them succeed in that. whether they want to call it. And I will tell you that I have clients, because we live in the B2B world, I have clients where I avoid the word social and I focus on digital and I call it digital communication. And you know what happens, Jeff? They nod their head. They get that.
Got it. I like that. And I already, I'm hearing you say it and I'm trying on the idea of using that terminology instead. And I can see how that would be more relatable, because the minute you bring social into it, they begin to think social media. Their brains, like right. a magnet to a moth to the flame, right. go to right. Facebook and Twitter and begin thinking about that. So I can, and the other thing is that I find there are times when talking to a client that I find social is somewhat limiting, because sometimes I need to talk to them about things that are not strictly, in the social realm. So how other things impact what you're doing at the social level. So how is your paid search campaign factoring in with what you're doing? How is your offline marketing taking place? What you're doing with recruiters, how is that going to interface with what you're doing on social? So we advise strategically on a lot of things that really don't touch social. So I'm liking this change in terminology to digital. Mm-hmm. So in Social Business Engine, your show, your platform, your entire way of explaining and talking about and promoting social business, which again, I think same as you, I have a vested interest in social business being the thing, because we're a quote unquote social business agency and I just don't want to rebrand. But one of the things that you do is you talk to and highlight companies that are doing it well. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that in terms of some things that you've seen that have been really successful or companies doing it right. But where I want to start is, if you think there are certain industries that that are faster or slower to adopt this, and then if there are certain industries where this is of a higher value versus a lower value. And my immediately off the bat and from my experience, there are certain organizations that I find, because they don't have a sales force necessarily, or they're just, a retail business or something, the only real applications for them, to benefit from social in general, they're a small store, they probably don't have a lot of internal collaboration and communication, it's marketing. But there are some organizations, larger enterprises, where there's many different units and divisions and functions and accountabilities, where obviously social business has a greater capacity to drive value. So in your estimation, in the work that you've done and the people you've spoken to, the companies you've highlighted, do you see any sort of trends across what's moving faster or slower and what has more or less value?
Sure. So I would say that companies that are a little on the bigger side, so they have an employee population that is north of 100. Now, that's a pretty broad category, right? North of 100 can include 200. It can also be 20,000. Mm-hmm. And so some of the brands that I have featured on my show are some of the larger brands. Cisco, I mentioned 3M, Avery Dennison, SAP, Oracle, just for a few examples. And so the common denominators, a common theme that I'm seeing is things I've already touched on in our conversation, Jeff, and that is that they have really recognize that they need to get their employees involved. And so they are putting very intentional plans in place to get their employees involved. So the buzzword that you and I know and it's become popular is employee advocacy. The funny thing is, a little bit of a tangent here, is if you look up employee advocacy in Google Trends, it's more of an HR term than it is a social business term. Mm-hmm. But we in this world of social business have really begun to use employee advocacy. Another way to look at it is, brand ambassador. So the biggest trend that I'm seeing, and, back to your question, like what kind of organizations are adopting this the fastest? I wouldn't say it's unique to an industry, but I would say that organizations that have sizable employee populations, and they realize that they have to have their employees involved, especially if they're in a category where they see their competition is already doing it, and now they feel like they're in a catch-up mode. Now they feel like they have a competitive disadvantage, and they're trying to do marketing the old-fashioned way. And when I say marketing, I mean just in terms of being out there in the marketplace. They're competing against other companies that are in their category, and they're seeing that those companies have their employees being propped up in the industry as subject matter experts. And if it's a brand who's sitting there hiding their employees behind their logo, then they're at a competitive disadvantage at this day and age.
So I would, you know, I think on the other side is there are those CEOs and those companies that are going to push back on that and say, yeah, but if I put them out there, doesn't that make them more attractive and aren't they more likely to leave? And I think the thing that I find myself encountering a lot is the skepticism behind this in a couple different ways. But at the core of it is that it's not inexpensive for us to come in, and I'm sure for your organization as well, it's not inexpensive for us to come in and do these high-level and deep-dive audits about company culture and technology. It's not inexpensive for us to come in and do these one-on-one training sessions and take these small teams and monitor the results. It's not inexpensive for us to do a social listening campaign and identify trends and create reports that talk about what the next steps are from those learnings. So I think there's and maybe I just don't know about these sources of data, but it seems like it's a very fragmented world out there based on company side, industry, all these different things, where it's very difficult to ascertain, you know, how can we say for certain that there is a business value to this when they are going to be dropping so much into this in terms of cost to get their company to change it? So just as an example, I'm sure you heard about when Zappos decided to go to, what is it, a holacracy? Did you hear about this?
I'm not sure that I have, no.
Okay, so Zappos decided to change their entire corporate structure so that essentially there were no managers. Basically, everybody was completely an autonomous unit, so to speak, and everybody was kind of empowered to make decisions and all this stuff. And about a third of their company left or something like that. And, you know, the idea was the CEO, Tony Hsieh, he basically, you know, read about this and thought it was the new wave and decided to go that way with his company. And the results right now are kind of mixed. There's also that story about the guy that raised all of his employees' minimum salary to $70,000, works or doesn't work. So there's all of these people out there that are taking risks and trying things. And to a certain CEO, the idea of social business versus rank and file, top-down management and silos that has worked for so many years is a hard thing to swallow. So how can you even make how do you go about making the case that this is important, or do you just not waste your time on the non-believers and instead go for the ones that do believe and actually work with them to become a success so that the other companies see a competitive disadvantage from not going that route? What's your approach?
Yeah, I really like the way you framed up the question, Jeff, because I wish, you know, to be really 100% transparent with you and your listeners here, I wish that I could just only work with believers. But the reality is, it's not reality. You know, yeah. You've got to be talking to companies and engaging with companies that are not necessarily believers in your conversation. Let me address one of the points you made at the front end of that question, and that is the concern, and it's a common concern that I've heard many, 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 many times, and that is, if we get our employees involved and give them a platform, then we're really just accelerating their departure from the company. Well, just the opposite is true. Just the opposite of true. You can actually, if you do it well, you can actually strengthen that relationship, that alliance. I once heard the phrase, strengthen the connective tissue between the employee and the employer. And so the opposite is true of that concern. So you actually increase the chance that employee is going to be more loyal to their employer because you're giving them a platform. Now, of course, they can still eventually leave, but that's also just the reality of life anyway in business. I mean, most lifetime employment is long gone. So why not build that alliance, as Reid Hoffman and his two co-authors so eloquently did described in their book? Build that alliance by giving them a plan to be advocates. Now, to the point of, you know, does this stuff really work? Well, that's why you start small, right? You don't the two examples you just gave me where they just made organization-wide decisions, that's not something I would ever recommend to a client because, boy, that's a huge gamble, right? You start small with a small team and you put a very, very well-defined plan in place. And then, of course, you need a stakeholder. You need an executive sponsor, maybe sponsor is the better word than stakeholder, but he or she is still a stakeholder, right? You want an executive sponsor who's behind it, and it's a small pilot program. So if it does fail, it's not mission critical to the entire organization, and even not necessarily visible to the entire organization. But if it does fail, then learn from that. Why did it fail? Maybe it was the wrong people. Maybe it was the wrong business objective. You know, but there's lots of different reasons that it might have failed. You know, maybe we didn't approach it the right way. So if you start small, you're going to dramatically increase your chance of having a successful pilot program. And then it can be sort of self-propelling and it can really feed itself. You know, one of my favorite examples, and she was on my podcast, is Dell. Now, Dell's been at this for quite some time now. One of the more mature large enterprises, you know, there are 110,000 employees. They announced recently their intent to acquire EMC, which is another approximately 50,000 employees. So if and when that deal closes, they're going to be a 160,000 person company. And they've been at social business for approximately 5 years now. And they have something called SMACU, Social Media and Community University. And it is a university style training program that puts people, employees, through it who want to go through it, by the way. It's not mandatory. And they are taught the things we're discussing here: how to engage, how to use content, how to use social media. It provided governance, what to say, what not to say, when it's appropriate to engage, when it's appropriate to, you know, raise a flag and say, hey, PR department, maybe you should respond to this, you know, that kind of thing. And they literally certify employees who have been through this training, and then they follow up with the managers to monitor that employee's engagement activities, and they're actually measured on the impact that they have on their business goals. So they're not just taught how to tweet, they are taught how to be better at their jobs, be better contributors to the business by learning a new skill set that they didn't previously have. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they are, I don't know the exact number. It's again, they're 110,000 person company today. And I think they've already certified somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 15,000 employees, give or take. Don't hold me to that number exactly, but it's kind of in that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, functionally, if you really break it down, you get to the nuts and bolts of it and strip away all the hype, it's a little bit like teaching your employees how to use Microsoft Office or teaching your employees how to better use the internet to research or anything like that. You're really saying there's a social graph out there and there are social ways of doing things that can provide a tremendous amount of benefit. Let's show you how to do it. And if you can incorporate that as a way that you do business, you can succeed and improve your own bottom line and at the same time improve your own standing in the community and how people perceive you as a thought leader and things like that. So it can advance your own career as well as our business objectives.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. But let me give you another lens to look at this through. Now, I don't know your exact age, but here's what I do know. You and I were not around in business. We probably weren't even born when the telephone was first introduced into business. But don't you think that there were executives sitting around saying, we can't put a phone on employees' desks?
They'll waste time all day calling people.
Well, not only that, we can't control what they say. Mm-hmm. Right? So how is that different? By the way, the exact same thing happened when email first became available. Mm-hmm. Okay? We went from not having any email to all of a sudden, almost overnight, this technology is available called email. The exact same conversations happen in corporate, you know, executive rooms saying, we can't give employees email because we can't control what they say and who they contact. That's all we're talking about here. It's just another level of digital. Well, I mean, hold on. Let me rewind on that. It's another level of communication, which happens to be digital. Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. It's just the next level of communication. It's in our lifetime.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Bernie, I know that you're a busy guy and you've got to get onto the grind today, but I really appreciate you stopping by on Conversations. I could sit and talk with you about social business all day. Like I said, I rarely get the chance to, so I sometimes feel fairly lonely in the social business world, but it's fantastic when I stumble upon people who have as much of a passion for it as I do and are doing great work there. So for all the people that are listening, I'm sure that at this point, if they are like the two of us and social business enthusiasts, they'll want to know where they can find out more about you and what you're doing. So tell people where they can go and be social with you, where they can learn more about you, engage with you, follow what you're up to, and otherwise see what you're doing.
Sure. Well, Jeff, first of all, I want to thank you for having me on your show. I love what you're doing. I love your own brand, True Voice Media. I think that that speaks really, really well to what you're doing at your agency. So kudos to you for that.
Thank you, sir.
And again, thank you for having me on your show. And if you're ever having a lonely moment, reach out to me and we'll talk social business.
Excellent.
But I'm easy to find by name, Bernie Borges, B-O-R-G-E-S. So I'm at Bernie Borges on pretty much all the social channels. And then my online media hub is socialbusinessengine.com. And that is powered by my agency, which is findandconvert.com.
Excellent. Well, I will be sure to put all of that in the show notes. And again, I'm so happy that you came by. I'm glad we found the time to do this. We probably connected over a year ago and mm-hmm. have just been kind of glancing collisions at either conferences right. or in different Facebook groups. So I'm glad we got the time to sit down and actually chat about something that we're both so passionate about. I would love to have you back on the show at some point in the future, and we can dig deeper into each of the different segments of social business. But for now, I just want to, you know, again, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. I've enjoyed it.
Of course. And for all of you out there listening, please share this episode. Let your friends know about it. Go to iTunes. Give us a rating. Tell us how great we are. Tell us what you love, what you hate, all that sort of good stuff. But please come back for the next one, because I'm going to have more great people on this show just like Bernie. Take care, everyone. Have a good day, good night, or whenever you're listening. You've been listening to the True Voice Media Podcast, and you made it all the way to the end of the episode. I'm proud of you. But now that you're here, this is what we're going to need you to do. First of all, head on over to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. If you don't know where to start, go to truevoicemedia.com/feedback. Next, if you're not yet a subscriber, it's time you fix that. Head over to truevoicemedia.com/podcast to subscribe by iTunes, Stitcher, or email. If you really want to show us some love, visit our partners and sponsors who help make this show possible. I know the show feels free, but trust me, it's not. I sure ain't done publishing these episodes, so I sure hope you're not done listening. I'll see you on the next one. Take care. you've been listening to the True Voice Media Podcast, and you made it all the way to the end of the episode. I'm proud of you. But now that you're here, this is what we're going to need you to do. First of all, head on over to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. If you don't know where to start, go to truevoicemedia.com/feedback. Next, if you're not yet a subscriber, it's time you fix that. Head over to truevoicemedia.com/podcast to subscribe by iTunes, Stitcher, or email. If you really want to show us some love, visit our partners and sponsors who help make this show possible. I know the show feels free, but trust me, it's not. I sure ain't done publishing these episodes, so I sure hope you're not done listening. I'll see you on the next one. Take care.